Before we begin, I would like to give a quick shout out to our sponsors at Neonic Training Solutions. Neonic is based in Shipley, West Yorkshire and operates as a student-led physiotherapy clinic. Neonic provides placement opportunities for a range of healthcare students and not just physios. Offering independent but supported patient contact coupled with excellent learning opportunities, their range of placements are designed to elevate your proficiency in clinical practice and foster confidence in your professional journey. This is a fantastic placement opportunity for all healthcare students. If you're intrigued, reach out to your university's placement lead as Neonic collaborate with universities nationwide. Or if you're considering an elective, you can always go direct.
Welcome back to another episode of Talking Physiotherapy Podcast. This week, it's myself, Brad, and I'm joined by Lewis Cohen. We've got a very special guest hailing from across the pond today, all the way from Canada. So I'd like to give a very warm welcome to Dalton Leno.
So, am I supposed to sing? Boys, I appreciate this intro. I don't think I've ever got the opportunity to be introduced to the Canadian national anthem. So this is already one of my favorite podcasts that I've been on.
Well, you're the first that we've introduced like that.
That should become a new thing, you know?
Yeah, just spamming the national anthem for
and just make person. You have to make every guest just sing to see if they know they know the lyrics.
Pretty trial by
fire. Like a cultural test.
Yeah.
So Dalton, obviously we know quite a lot about your backstory, but you're able to give a little bit of sort of your origin story just for our listeners, just to get to know you a little bit better.
Yeah, for sure. So I'm a physiotherapist by trade, I guess you could say. I also own a business, but I got into the physiotherapy profession back in, well, I guess I got into school in 2016 is when I started my physiotherapy. It's a master's in Canada, so it would be like 2 years after undergraduate degree, which I did in kinesiology, and then went on to do my master's 2-year master program, which I did in London, Ontario, Canada. So I graduated from my master's in physical therapy in 2018. And then from there, I started practicing as a physiotherapist and a strength coach. And that's kind of where like my whole journey of like working as a physio started. As I was in physio school, myself and like my now business partner had started a social media, I guess, brand, you could call it, around physio. And we started a podcast. And I know we'll probably talk a lot about that in this conversation. But that kind of really, you know, thrusted us into the profession. And then in 2020, we, myself and two other business partners, opened a physical location called the Movement Physio and Performance, where we offer physiotherapy services. And that's kind of what I spend a lot of my time doing now, both treating still, as well as running the business and doing the social media thing that we do as well. So I have my hands in a lot of things.
So do you want to give us a bit more of an origin story? What was it initially that attracted you to physio?
Yeah, it's a good question. There's two things. Like, one, I was always very much involved in like sport and, you know, training and exercise. So I saw like physiotherapy as an opportunity for me to like, you know, express some of those things. The other thing was, I always tell this story, is when I was in my first year of my undergrad, one of my professors asked me like what I wanted to get into or what I wanted to do with my degree. And I told her I wanted to get into physical therapy. And she basically kind of like laughed at me and was like, yeah, everyone says that, but no one actually gets in. And so I kind of took that as a little chip on my shoulder to like kind of prove her wrong. I was like, okay, we'll see. So that also like motivated me to kind of pursue the degree in physical therapy. And I think as I started to realize more of what the profession had to offer, it really aligned with like what I wanted to do within a career. Like, it gave me an opportunity to educate. I was always into like education or coaching. So it kind of gave me that opportunity. Gave me the opportunity to work with people. I always wanted to, you know, serve other people or work with other people as a career. And then the last thing is it allowed me to stay in the area of like health and fitness, something that I really enjoy myself. So it kind of combined all three of those things together. And that's really what eventually became the big driver of why I end up going down the route of physio.
Yeah, I think I always like to see the development of this question as well. So all very valid reasons there to become a physiotherapist, but has that changed as you've become a physiotherapist? What's keeping you in the profession?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think it's still at the base. It really provides me those opportunities, which really keeps me happy in what I'm doing. But I think it's evolved in the sense of just the vision and the mission that we now kind of have at the movement is part of like who I am in my career. So, you know, our big mission here is to empower people to take control of their health. And then the bigger vision of the movement is to change the way that people view and consume healthcare. So those are like two of the big driving motives for me personally, but also the business and the brand, which is very much an extension of me and obviously my business partners and everyone that works here. So I don't think it's necessarily evolved, but maybe has come more clear as to what's been kind of driving me and keeping me, you know, in the profession.
And we're going to come on to the detail of that a little bit later on, but in terms of bringing it back to sort of very early days, we've kind of talked about over the last couple of years how physio in the UK at university is taught and how it's evolved and the experiences that we've had. What was your experience of physio? Obviously, it's a slightly different structure. What's the teaching of it like? What's the approaches that are predominantly taught?
Yeah, so my physio school experience was great. Like I met a lot of great people. I had a lot of great professors. It really opened my eyes to, you know, what I wanted to do in the profession and what I didn't want to do in the profession. And I think like that's a good thing, right? My one gripe or kind of challenge that I've always found with physio school is it's very much dictated by the board exam that we all have to write here in Canada to become a licensed physiotherapist. And I think that board exam is very much outdated. And a lot of the stuff that is, you know, evaluated on that exam is not necessarily what's going on in clinical practice to a degree. And so what happens is a lot of what drives our schooling is what is on the exam, because physio schools are obviously going to be judged based off of how well they prepare you to pass the exam. So I think that has always had an influence on what gets taught. And one of the biggest drivers for me and Will when we started the podcast was we found that there was a gap between what we were learning in school and what was actually going on in clinical practice. And we used the podcast for our own knowledge, but also eventually to share it to other people to show that there is a lot of really cool things going on in the profession that people are doing that are separate from what we're learning in school. And if you're feeling a little bit, you know, down about some of the things that are going on in school, or if this is necessarily something you want to keep pursuing, because I had moments of that in my own physio school journey, that like, hey, there's a lot of other cool stuff that you can do once you get out and get your degree. So overall, I would say like my physio school experience was great. It gave me the opportunity to get into this profession. I've met a lot of great people. There was some great like classes and profs that I did have, but then I also think there's a lot that could improve to, you know, not only improve the experience of the physios that are going through the schooling, but also improve our impact as a profession.
That's really interesting. One question I did have around the actual teaching mm-hmm. was, so when we learn physio in the UK, we've got like our core is like musculoskeletal, neuro, and like respiratory. They're kind of your core areas. Are they all taught in Canada, or is it more of the MSK route?
Same as that. Like we basically get all the core curriculum, right? Because again, like when people go into physio, you know, some people might go neuro route, some people might go the cardio route. So they obviously have to make sure that we're competent in doing that. We have to go out on clinical placements as well. So I think during my schooling, so I said it was 2 years, I think we did six clinical placements that are each 6 weeks in length, if I remember correctly. And that would be like, we'd have to collect hours in different realms. So we'd have to get neuro hours, we'd have to get cardio resp hours, we'd have to get MSK hours, that kind of stuff. And then once we satisfied the number of hours that we got, that would obviously go towards like our graduation.
So largely very similar to the structure that we've got in terms of clinical placement, and that's probably a big factor into why the exam boards or the registration boards are quite transferable, in that you'll find that there'll be quite a few UK educated physios will go to Canada, and you'll get some vice versa. You've touched on your podcast there. Do you want to give a couple of minutes to plug it?
Yeah.
Obviously, from our perspective, we've listened to a couple of episodes. I would personally say it's probably a little bit more casual than ours, and not necessarily that's a bad thing. I actually quite enjoy it. It's a lot more relaxed than maybe how we've approached ours in the past. Probably slightly shorter in length and slightly less detailed, but they're almost like something that you'd listen to while you're out on a walk. You know, it's a nice wee snippet type episode. Go on, plug that a bit.
Yeah, I mean, the podcast has evolved for a while, has evolved over time, because like we started it in 2018, right? So now being in 2023, it's been quite a bit of a journey. But, you know, it originally started out as Will and I interviewing other practitioners, because we were in physio school and we were coming at the podcast from a perspective of physio students. And so we got the opportunity to like make some really cool connections and interview some really cool people in the space and learned a ton on that front. So back in that time, it was a little bit more intended to pull particular topics that people would be interested in MSK, like ACL rehab, low back rehab, like that kind of stuff, a little bit more consumable on that front. As the podcast has evolved in terms of like Will and I now graduating from physio school and then going into practice, we kind of started to transition it more to like our own experience in practice as clinicians. And now that we've kind of moved and been practicing for 5 years, we've kind of now moved it to more towards like, hey, here's some of the stuff we've learned in the first 5 years of our practice. And we kind of share that journey or those things that we've learned with our listeners. And I would say our podcast has always been more geared towards students and new grads, just because when we launched it, we were students. And then we've always kind of still spoke to that same audience, which I really, really enjoy. And yeah, you know, it's always been kind of casual, even when we were doing interviews. Like Will and I really just wanted the podcast to be like an extension of us. And, you know, we try not to take things like too serious. Like I think sometimes it can be like in the profession, you can get very much like so focused in on things that you kind of lose a sense of like, hey, you know, we're all people here just trying to like enjoy our career and have fun and help people and connect with people. And that's a big part of what Will and I do and how we practice. So we kind of let the podcast be an extension of that, but we also do really have a drive to spread the message and to really honestly like have new grads and students really realize how much of an impact that they can have as clinicians when they get out of school, because I think that's really, really important to the progression of the profession.
That's really cool. Just looking back as a sort of a highlight question, what was your favorite conversation and why?
Well, that's a good question. Man, I'm trying to think like back to some of the interviews that we did. Or just in general. Yeah.
But either or, favorite guest or just favorite conversation.
Yeah. I would say like there's a couple guests that I really learned a lot and enjoyed. Like Todd Hargrove is someone that we had on the podcast. I don't know if you guys are familiar with him, but he's really awesome. And I learned a ton from him when I was in physio school. So if you guys haven't heard of him, you should definitely check out the episode on PT CoffeeCast. I don't know which episode it is, but it's back in the archives. And then like, it was really cool to sit down and talk to someone like Greg Lehman. Like we interviewed him a while back. He was a massive influence on Will and I in physio school. And honestly, he really opened up my eyes to like the combination of biopsychosocial and how biomechanics matter, when they matter, when they don't matter. He's a fellow Canadian. So obviously that's, you know, something that is important, but he was really just kind of cool to have the opportunity to like sit down and talk to him. So those are two that like really stand out in my mind. I honestly like it's crazy. You forget about all the stuff that you do. Like you guys might start realizing this when you're putting out more episodes and if you're creating content, like you kind of don't realize like, oh shit, like I actually did some pretty cool stuff or I talked to some pretty cool people. Like, so I'll even go back and look at some of the episodes and be like, oh man, like I forgot that we even like had the opportunity to talk to this person. Like that's super cool. So there's probably some other ones in there that I'm missing, but those two stand out to me.
Do you think slightly from a kind of selfish perspective, the actual platform of a podcast gives you an opportunity to talk to someone that you probably wouldn't otherwise get the opportunity to talk to? Because I definitely think from our perspective, having that as a almost like a middle ground, it gives us the opportunity to be able to do that, you know, thinking about some of the people that we've interviewed, whether that was on a podcast or looking back at the conference a couple of years ago, I don't feel like you would typically get that opportunity to talk to those types of clinicians as a student. It's almost like the podcast is what allows you to bind to that person nearly.
Oh, 100%. It was very much like selfishly driven in the sense that Will and I wanted to learn more. And we started realizing like there's people out there that are posting content that we're like, oh, this is interesting. That really drove the podcast because one, we're like, you know, this is an opportunity. Like at that time too, there was still physio podcasts, but there wasn't as many as there is now. And there wasn't really, from my knowing, like any that were coming from the student perspective. So it was really a great opportunity for us to be like, hey, you know, we're just a couple of students. We really want to learn more about the profession. Like, would you love to chat with us? And then, it totally grew from there in the sense of like, hey, who can we learn from and talk to that would really help us? And then there's got to be other people that are willing to listen to this and learn from it, you know?
Yeah, I think you mentioned it on one of your podcasts, but that sort of thought of when we're having these conversations, you don't really picture people listening to them. That's just kind of a byproduct of it. You're just having these chats with these different people, and then as a result there is a podcast that people do tune into, which is really cool. But yeah, it's an interesting one.
Yeah, man. And I'm still like we've been doing this for a while and like, I love it. It's just like one of my favorite things to do, the podcast, create content. Like, I think it's a really cool opportunity, but I'm still blown. Like, I'm still so grateful for anyone that like tunes into our podcast. Like, it's still cool when I get people that reach out like, hey, like I listened to this episode or I listened to this, like, you know, Will and I are just two dudes that love coffee, that love physio. And we want to try and like get the most out of the profession. It's like, it's still so cool for us to hear that. So, It never hasn't gone away, you know, over the years that we've done it.
Perfect. Should we jump into the working world?
Yeah, go for it.
Yeah. So if we think sort of post uni now, going into that sort of that new grad role, that first job, I know we had a few chats off air, but what did you find hardest coming into that first role?
Yeah, it's a lot. It's like, it's very overwhelming. Cause like you definitely, as a new grad, you know, there's always going to be, you know, we talk about this a lot, but imposter syndrome, there's always going to be this stress of like, am I actually going to be able to help somebody? And you know, you've been given a bunch of, you know, skills and ways to do that, but you know, trying to adapt your own kind of flow and way of treating can be very challenging. So I think the hardest part for me was trying to use the skills that I learned in physio school and create my own type of framework or flow for being able to like help someone, because I knew like the tests that I needed to do. I knew like a lot of the differential diagnoses that we had to go through, but trying to figure out like, how do I actually like do a subjective that makes sense, transition that into objective testing that I want to test to try to pull the right information out. And how do I take that information and problem solve all that in my head to be able to put a plan together for this person and then communicate that plan to them? So I think that aspect of just like how to create a framework for delivering that very effectively is the biggest challenge that I had. And that just takes time to develop. And a lot of mentorship is helpful for that. If you can have the opportunity to be under someone that has their own frameworks that they can impart on you. But I find that was the most challenging, is finding like how I wanted to go about doing that made the most sense for my skill sets or my personalities, but also still able to really help the person in front of me.
Chat to me a bit more about imposter syndrome. I seen Frank's nodding his head there as soon as you said that. And it's probably something that we've never really touched on the podcast. And well, I don't feel like I've ever felt what imposter syndrome feels like, in that.
Yeah.
Largely to me, I don't have any expectation on myself in the first place. So therefore, I don't feel like I'm an imposter in anything because there's no bar that I'm trying to hit as such. But you said that you felt it. What brings those thoughts on? And then two, what do you feel like you're impostering as such?
Yeah, it's a good question, right? And this is probably something that you hear many people have different perspectives on, and in like, it's not just in the physio space, right? Like, we hear this term often. And you know, for me, I think imposter syndrome happens when you're stepping outside of the realm of what you know or what you feel comfortable in delivering. And a lot of times that happens when you're a new grad, because there is a lot of information. There's a lot of like, you know, hey, try this technique, or you should do this assessment. And then you're getting bits and pieces of all these different like skill sets that you think you should have to be a successful physio. And you try to implement some of them, even though you don't really know exactly what you're doing or why you're doing it. And you're just doing it because it's been told that this is how you do it. Yeah. And that really drives, in my opinion, a lot of imposter syndrome, because you're doing something that's not you. And so like for you, Lewis, for example, saying like you don't feel imposter syndrome because you have no expectation on yourself, like you're not trying to reach this pinnacle or whatever you want to call it, that makes sense to me, because what I've learned and something that we talk a lot about in our mentorship is like everyone is chasing this super physio that they have in their mind that is like this perfect person that could fix every single person that comes through the door, that knows every technique, that uses every modality in the right way. And they're chasing this super physio that doesn't exist, and they chase it and they try to fill the gap by adding more tools to their toolbox, more knowledge, more courses. But the funny thing about that is that actually just drives imposter syndrome more, because you start to realize that you don't know, you start realizing there's more out there that you're like, oh shit, I'm never going to be able to know this and get to the level of this super physio that people think exists that doesn't. And if anyone claims they're that person, I would suggest staying away from them. But like, that is what I think really drives, you know, imposter syndrome. And what I've realized and what we talk about is like, you are the super physio, and the way that you define yourself as a super physio is by identifying like what your standards are as a clinician, what your values are, how do you want to show up as a clinician? Like, you, Lewis, how do you want to show up? And who do you admire as a physio? What don't you admire as a physio? And really getting comfortable with what that looks like. And that becomes your gold star, your star that you chase. And as long as you're keeping those standards and you're holding those standards and you're moving towards that, that is going to reduce the amount of imposter syndrome you have, because you're just showing up as you. That doesn't mean you're not going to like make mistakes and do a shitty job sometimes or whatever, but you're going to know that like, hey, yeah, I messed up, but I did it in the name of like what I believe to be true, and that I'm comfortable with having mistakes being made. And then you just learn from that, right? So I think that is kind of, you know, how imposter syndrome gets created, how I've kind of navigated it a little bit, and where I see a challenge with new grads is they get sucked into that kind of idea of like creating the super physio by filling the gap with a ton of more knowledge, courses, etc.
This might completely sidetrack this episode here, because I want to jump in a wee bit more on that. So we'll come into your mentorship, because that's obviously definitely part of it, just from what you've described there in terms of navigating that. Do you think social media has something to do with that, in that there's just the regurgitation of an immense volume of stuff that's either being published or courses that are being shown or like mentorship programs to sign up to? And it's like, you get to a point where you're just chasing your own tail essentially, and you nearly need to go the complete opposite of it. You nearly need to go full circle the other way and think, right, well, there's that sheer volume of stuff over there, I'm actually just gonna sit and just let it kind of go around like a revolving door, and then I'm gonna go in and I'm gonna pick out what I want when I want, do you know, when I want to do that. As such, you know, that's always gonna be there. You know, if you're first year out of uni or second year out of uni, you're in absolutely no rush to become that type of physio, because you're actually in a, well, I feel like you're in a unique position where you can make as many mistakes as you want, and the consequences are fairly minimal, providing that someone doesn't die.
Yeah.
You know, and it I think it's you're gonna keep making a mistake because you don't know what it is. it's a different question when you make that mistake twice, three, four, five times. That's a different scenario. But, and probably from my own perspective, I've always struggled to understand how people can be quite hard on themselves from making the mistake the first time. You know?
Yeah. I mean, I have a lot of thoughts on that. Cause like, I agree with you in the sense that like, I mean, social media makes it more challenging because social media very much will be able to glorify like quick fixes. And like, those are the things that everyone gets attracted to. So as a clinician, you're like, oh, if I could just use this technique that helped this person get out of back pain, because this social media clip showed that like, if I do this technique, it's going to improve, it saved this person's back, whatever. It's very easy to like get caught up in the fact that like, oh, I need to be able to do that to help people. But what you realize when you get into physio is that it's very uncertain. There's a lot of factors that influence people's recovery. There's a lot of things that go into rehab that are messy, and like learning a set of principles, which like, you know, I'm biased to a set of principles that I think are the best way to help improve people's, you know, injuries. But also my thing is like, how am I going to put the locus of control on the client and help them improve and take control of their health? So if I'm coming from that as the standard that I'm treating with, there's going to be certain things that I'm going to use to fulfill on that, which is going to be education. It's going to be exercise. It's going to be things that are really going to help impact their health, which I'm biased to is one, the best thing to help people improve their health. And two, we are seeing that that is a good way of helping people get out of pain and get back to what they want to do. But I think what happens is you get caught on social media and you start seeing all these quick fixes and you think, I need to be like this person. And then you start trying to take all these courses to find that solution, but that solution doesn't exist. And then to your point, Lewis, I always encourage people that, hey, why you need to set your standards and what your values are and how you want to show up as a clinician before you get into practice is because if you have those set, you get into practice, just start seeing people and start learning how to communicate, start learning what you could do better or what you could gain more skills in to help fulfill on the type of clinician that you want to be. So maybe you get into practice and you start realizing that you're really bad at communicating or that you could improve your communication skills to educate clients better. Cool. Now that I know that, I'm going to plug them, but Nick Hanna's course, because that's a communication course that will help me speak more, be a better communicator. Or maybe you learn like, oh, I need to improve my ability to like progress or regress exercises. Who am I going to go and learn from that aligns with my standards and my values that can provide me with that information to best serve my clients? So like getting into practice and identifying what are the skill sets that you can improve on based off the standards that you've set for yourself is going to make it a lot easier for you to make those decisions around what other courses you need to take or who you should learn from versus going in there with no standards, no values, no way you want to show up. And now there's just all this information that's being bombarded to you and you're like, well, what the hell do I do? Like, I don't know. I don't know what I want to do. This is what they're telling me, but then I'm seeing people and like that shit's not actually happening. So like, am I the dumb one, you know, and you get caught in that. So
yeah, I think everything you've kind of said there just rings true. And I think we've kind of done a full circle there, but that sort of framework that you use using the values, it kind of prevents you getting lost in that space because you've got something to ground you each time. You're always coming back to, well, how does this impact me and my values? How does this align with the person I want to become? So just like a sort of different flip on the question, was it you and Will that kind of came up with that framework or is that something that you were put onto?
I think like, I mean, we're not reinventing the wheel here. Like there's plenty of like, you know, I don't know if I learned it from like a particular physio, but like there's plenty of like, you know, people that talk about the importance of identifying your values as a person, your standards as a person, and then pursuing those standards to the best of your ability. It's like, it's kind of like how I approach my life. So I was just learning, I was just seeing some of these parallels from like, I don't know what you want to call it, psychology, self-help, like whatever it might be that like talks about how you as an individual might want to find and identify who you are and what you want to pursue. And I was just like, oh, this is just what's happening to new grads and physios in the physio realm. It's just in the concept of treating and like, not getting outcomes or not knowing what to do or what courses to take. And I was just like, oh, this makes sense. And I kind of just married the two and came up with this whole super physio idea just because, like, I thought it would be something that people would relate to, you know, and it kind of made sense. But I wouldn't say I invented the framework or the idea, but it kind of like put it in the context of like what you might be going through as like a physio student. And I'm sure I'm not the first person in a physio mentorship that it probably has talked about the importance of standards and that kind of stuff, but it's all about the context, I think, that you pack it with.
Well, perfect. I think probably a good place to lead into asking a little bit more about the mentorship there. So you kind of had this framework and you thought, I can help people with this. What were your initial goals coming into the mentorship? What drove you to start that up?
Yeah, I think we were getting a lot of, so a big driver of it was when we started our business, right? We wanted to hire clinicians that would succeed in our model and like fulfill on the mission and the vision of the movement. And so that's just obviously an extension of us as clinicians. So we had to kind of create a way of like, how do we identify who this person might be? And then how do we like lead them and kind of educate them and train them on how to show up in that way. So that's really where the mentorship started from. And we started doing like in-person mentorships at the movement because we had plenty of people reaching out to us like, hey, I would like to shadow you or whatever. So we started like a 3-month mentorship where people would come on and we take them through these different processes. They shadow us, whatever. And so that started kind of triggered the idea of us starting this online mentorship that we then took the podcast and all the kind of things that we had talked about on the podcast and learned in the podcast and kind of married the two together based off of like what we were doing for like the people that we were bringing on at the movement as physios. And that kind of became what the mentorship was. And at the core of it was just like what we talked about. We were really realizing that, you know, a lot of the things that we were successful at when we were coming up as physios had to do with understanding frameworks of how do I want my career to look? Understanding how to set up a plan and deliver a plan effectively to the clients. Like, how do I actually ask the right questions? How do I, you know, communicate, hey, you have a tendinopathy. Here's the process of where you are and where you need to go. How do you communicate that effectively so the client understands how that's going to happen? So we were just kind of taking these little things that we were learning and implementing and put it into a mentorship. And we also started discovering the importance of communication or sales on how we sell our service to people, because sales is just communicating to people how you can help them solve a problem. So we started learning about sales and how that might integrate into how we utilize conversations as a clinician. And then the importance of marketing, which everyone talks about marketing in the business aspect of things, which it is, but we look at marketing as how do you fill your caseload with clients that fill you up? Because everyone talks about being, you know, talks about burnout. A lot of the reason I think people get burned out is because they're not even really seeing people that actually fulfill their mission as a physio. They're seeing people that maybe doesn't align with the type of, you know, care they want to deliver on. So we were just kind of seeing these different things and wanted to come at it from that perspective versus like, hey, here's another course on how you can, you know, do this movement screen. There's plenty of people out there that are doing that at a really high level that, you know, are doing it better than us. So we decided like, that's kind of not the route we wanted to go.
See, just, and I think we're going to go into a bit more detail around the sales and the marketing. Whenever you're looking at it from that perspective, the people that are coming in through the door that are burning you out as such, is that just getting anyone through the door for the sake of getting anyone through the door, and you're not actually getting to do with that patient what you're looking to do, or they don't fit the type of, and this might be the wrong way of saying it, but they don't necessarily fit the type of profile of patient that you're looking to treat, but people might just take them in just to get another patient on the list or to, is that kind of what you're getting at there?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot that influences that, right? Like, it depends on where you work and like if you work within a clinic and what type of like approach to care that they facilitate, you know, who are they bringing in through the doors? Cause like, if you're working at a clinic with someone that like that's the, they're bringing maybe people through the door that don't necessarily even know what physio is, what the value of physio is, don't even really want to be there. They just told to come there. Like, well, what are you going to do? You're not going to just say, I'm not going to treat this person, right? Yeah. Like, obviously you're going to be stuck treating. But to my point, to the point about knowing your standards and your values and all that kind of stuff, if you know how you want to treat and what you want to get out of your career, you might decide not to pursue that job because you're looking at this job as a job that actually might not be able to provide you with what you're looking for. But I am saying that I think we have a lot more control over, you know, bringing in the right people than we think, even when you do work within another clinic. And obviously everyone's situation is different. And I know you guys have a little bit of a different like model in over where you guys are in comparison to Canada. But, you know, in like our model where we're working in like a private clinic, it's like, if you want to work with runners, it's like, you could start creating, you know, utilizing your skills to market to those people so that you can drive those people in your door. And if you're starting to get people to come into your door and have success and they're telling other people, and now you're getting more people on your caseload that are runners, I don't think your clinic manager, your clinic owner is ever going to be mad that you're getting more people coming into their place of business to see you specifically for a skill set. And that's now filling your caseload up with the people that you want to work with. So I think we have more control, you know, than we think sometimes. It's just knowing the skills as to how do I start doing that if that's something that you want to do. And if it's not, it's cool. Like, you could just keep seeing the people that you're seeing, right? But I think there's more to that than just being like, oh, well, this is just who I have to see, you know?
Yeah. I remember having a bit of an experience first couple of months working where a guy came into me with back pain and he'd never been to us before. He'd moved down from another part of the country. And he'd said that he had this exact same episode of back pain 5-6 years ago or whatever it was. And he had said he'd seen a physio and they had done acupuncture and ultrasound and something else. And he was basically just looking for the same thing again and trying to kind of have that conversation of, that's not really what we offer. And then trying to explain we're much more exercise based and these are the reasons X, Y, and Z. And then kind of being like, are you willing to sign up to that? Like, are you willing to put a little bit of work in? And it was just a blunt no, do you know? Yeah. And you're kind of like, there's not, I can't really offer you very much here, you know?
And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. Like, I think that's like, that there's a lot that goes into that, right? Like, there's a lot that we can go down in terms of like, as physios, I think we need to do a better job of like, you know, changing the narrative around what we do and how we help people, blah, blah, blah. But even in that moment, it's like, honestly, in the end, it's probably better for both parties that that's the case, because this guy's not gonna, you know, he doesn't want to put any work. So whatever you're gonna offer him is not gonna be what he wants. And then, you know, you're just going to be frustrated that you have to work with someone who like is asking you to ultrasound, which you don't really want to do, which then is going to make you feel like, well, why am I doing this? And that's kind of the trap, not a trap, but that's just like what people get stuck in sometimes. I think
there's definitely a lot to say for like a therapist patient relationship and that getting that fit right. I think you've spoke about it a few times when you sort of went into the receptionist, how they'd talk and sort of, we've got a perfect fit for you. We've got a guy who's really experienced with this sort of injury. And it just gives that trust already that you're kind of building in. And if you don't have that relationship, I think you're already sort of losing the battle if you don't have that trust.
Yeah, totally. And that's why, like, you know, it's just going to drain you more. And that's why I think people get burnt out, right? Where, you know, if you're working with people that guy comes in the reverse, who's a guy who has back pain, who wants to get back to deadlifting, or even if he just wants to get back to playing with his kids and lift his kids up, but he's willing to put in the work that, you know, as a clinician is most likely going to lead to him having long-term success. Like, we could probably all agree that if someone's trying to get back to like lifting a child that's 30 pounds, that like, you're probably going to have to do some type of load management, some types of progressions in that sense to be able to successfully long-term help that client not have another flare up. It's like, you now get to work with him in the capacity that makes sense to you by providing him with those progressions, the education, versus just giving him some like passive treatment, which, hey, maybe his pain feels better, he feels okay, and you know, he moves on. But is that setting him up for the best success? I don't know. And in some cases, that guy could probably get that type of care, get better, and go back and lift his kids. And then now we're sitting here like, well, I don't know what's the right way to do it. And that's the conundrum we have in physio. But my bias is like, I want to change the way that people, or I want to give people the tools to empower them to take control of their health. And in my opinion, learning how to lift, exercise, education around their health is going to do that for them. And I'm going to use physio as a way to do that.
So how would you approach a patient who's quite rigid on not keen to do exercise? You know that that is definitely the right approach for them, well, certainly in the early stages anyway. And you're kind of sitting there and you know you're talking to a brick wall, essentially.
Yeah, I mean, that comes down to like learning how to, you know, communicate and like see if there's any ways to like navigate that situation. And you know, in some cases there's people like, you know, who are just like, no, like a hard no, and there's no real way of changing their mind. And like, if you're not going to be the guy to do it, most likely, right? Yeah. But what most people come into us with sometimes, even if they have had, like, you know, they're not totally into exercising, they're not totally aware of what that can do for them, but maybe they've had an experience in their life where they've tried something, but it didn't work. Like, yeah, it didn't get better. So that just opens up the door of conversation of like, hey, like, tell me a little bit about what you have tried to allow for you to have some success. Well, you know, I noticed that when I do some massage, or when I, like, you know, stop, you know, lifting my kid, my back feels better. And then it just opens up the door of conversation to be like, oh, okay, well, what happens when you didn't keep going for massage? Well, it just came back. Be like, oh, that's interesting. Well, why do you think that it just came back? Well, I don't know, maybe because, and then you just kind of like open up the window of conversation and then see if there's anywhere where you can start to implement something that would make sense for them to see why movement or exercise is the key to at least helping them move forward, you know, in that journey outside of just getting some type of like passive modality done to them, you know?
Yeah, I think that, again, fostering that good relationship, but diving into sort of that presentation we delivered the other day, boys, when we're talking about iatrogenic effects, one of the biggest things that's coming about up in the research is that confrontation. So if you say, no, exercise is the right thing, we know the evidence is for exercise, you've lost that person. And regardless of what treatment you do, even if it's the best rehab plan, they're probably not going to get better because they're just either not going to do it, or they've lost the buy-in completely. So being able to get that relationship 100%.
And I've been there and I've learned that the hard way. And like most people have, right? It's like, and that, to my point, is why I think learning how to communicate, or if you want to talk about what sales is, it's like sales is learning how you can communicate a problem, like how you can communicate to them how you can solve their problem, and you learn ways to get buy-in, right? It's really important. So like in that situation, if someone is aggressively confrontational to me doing exercise, like I'm not going to be like, no, you need to do exercise. Like we're going to have a conversation that, you know, reminds them that like, hey, you know, okay, I see where you're coming from. Like, let's talk about this, try to really understand them more. And there's different skills that you can gain as a clinician, how to navigate those situations successfully. And that is what I believe we should be learning how to do and what we should be really focusing on, versus like, how do I learn this other technique that is going to help this person, you know, change their back pain. I think in the long run, learning how to navigate those things is going to be more successful for you as a clinician, because you're going to come across that every single day in your practice. And that's a lot of what we talk about in the mentorship. And then there's other people that we have good relationships with that are doing mentorships that really help improve even more like specific skills such as communication.
Yeah, like I definitely feel you have more wins than losses in that regard. But it is funny how sometimes the losses just kind of stick in your head, even though it could only be a handful, and you're like, where did I lose that person? Or, you know, what was it that they just couldn't get their head around? Or, you know.
Yeah, and that's what, but so like to that point, I think it's really good to be reflective. Like, I think that that's where I've learned the most as a clinician is being reflective with Will and like other people that are around me as to like, hey, where did this go wrong? And why I think having standards to come back to that, why I think having standards and values is super important, that is that if you withheld all your standards, all your values as a clinician during that process, you reflect on the actual process of how that went with the client, and you did everything from your perspective that was done and to fulfill on the way that you know you should show up as a clinician, and they still didn't get better, or they fall off and they don't see you. Sometimes it's not on you. Sometimes it's on them, and a lot of times it is on them. But you can't not be honest with yourself and reflect on the situation and be like, oh yeah, I really sucked ass on how I communicated to that person. I really flared the shit out of that person and didn't really think about how I could progressively load this better. And now they're not coming back to me. You have to be honest with yourself and be like, okay, well now I need to improve on these skills. But there's times where if you check all those things off and you're reflecting and you're like, hey, I didn't just, that's just how it goes. Then you move on, right? Instead of like getting caught up in the fact that like you have to get everyone to these outcomes. Like, I think that also drives a lot of burnout and imposter syndrome in people as well.
Yeah, I think a big difference between sort of the NHS in the UK and the sort of private practice model you're describing there is the patients you're seeing, whether it's insurance or whether it's privately funded, there's a payment to come and see you. What I found really difficult sort of in that MSK setting was the patients that I was seeing who didn't really know what physio was. They didn't really know what was going on. They didn't really want to come. It was a GP referral that had been passed on. I think that's what I found really hard, because you didn't even have any sort of buy-in from the start. They didn't want to be there. They just wanted to be out of pain. And that was a completely different narrative to where I came from. But what I wanted to kind of throw into that was, in the UK, we're very like patient based. It's all patient orientated, and sounds to you guys like it's your clients, the people that you come in and see. And I just wondered if that was a sort of a different narrative with that paying for the service and maybe increasing adherence or something along
that. Yeah, it's an interesting question. I mean, I don't think there's anything too deep about it. Like, I always just refer to people as clients because I like that term better than patient. I feel like sometimes patient just indicates that there's something wrong with them, or that they're caught up in the, you know, medical system, or there's some type of diagnosis that this person has that now they're a patient of mine that I'm working to like fix this diagnosis. Where like client to me is more like, hey, we're just working together and I'm trying to do whatever I can to help provide you with the guidance to get you back to whatever, you know, it is that you love. I just think the verbiage around that, I prefer it. You know, we call our clients, we call them clients, we call them, you know, community members. Like we kind of like that verbiage a little bit better. In terms of like adherence and that kind of stuff, I don't really know what the research would say about that, but like we do know that language has a big impact on people. So that there might be something to that.
Really interesting one. Lewis, anything?
Yeah, more? I don't really know what. I refer to them as patients, but I've always referred to them as a patient.
Because... Yeah, I quite liked that terminology of that working together there as a client.
Yeah, I would agree with that. But then my kind of view on it is that they wouldn't... I probably have two ways of looking at it. They're either a patient or an athlete, and that's probably not the right way to look at it. And I don't know what's just happened AI-wise.
Whose birthday is it? That was crazy.
But I don't know what. I feel like that person isn't coming to you unless there's some sort of issue. So
do you feel like
they're under?
I was just gonna say, like, do you feel like if they like they almost want you to refer to them as a patient because it puts that like as a more serious kind of relationship, like a doctor kind of relationship, to like with people more versus like clients is a little bit like, let's say, lax of a term or a loose term that might deter people from the seriousness of it. And I'm just speculating based off like what kind of where you were going with it.
Yeah, quite possibly. And that's probably more subconscious than anything. Like the way that I would view it is that, and this is probably where the patient aspect of it comes, is that I'm responsible for their care. So like they're under my care. And I don't really think you would have that. But yeah, I wouldn't term care and empathy in the same way with a client as I would with a patient, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it's interesting, right? Like in my thought on all that is it's very much like semantics. What really matters is how you show up for your client. It's like, yeah, how are you showing up for your client? What are you doing for them? And people are always going to know when you care about them and when you're trying to get the best outcome for them and when you're doing everything you can versus when you're not getting the best care and you're not getting put at the forefront of like rehab. Like people are always going to notice that. So whether you call them a client or a patient, I really don't think it matters that much. It's more of like, how are you showing up for this person and what are they getting out of like the interactions with you is always how I've thought about it.
But then it's interesting because if they're a sports person of any level, I immediately call them an athlete.
So 100%. Like, and I would too, because that would relate to them more because they would relate to themselves as athletes. So I'm always going to relate to them as like what would make the most sense for us to be get along, you know, for them to like want to see that I know that they're an athlete, you know?
Yeah. Because I was watching a session earlier on. It was Phil Glasgow talking about muscle injuries a couple of years ago at I can't remember what the conference was, but it was basically like around injury prevention. And he was like at the Irish Rugby, they refer to it as the robustness program because no player wants to do injury prevention and no coach wants to see a player do injury prevention because it creates a negative connotation on it. Whereas if it's a robustness program, it's, he referred to it as a program that allows you to play at your capacity, or it's basically about being available as often as you can and being able to give maximal effort, which is the same as injury prevention, because if you're injured, you're not able to do that, but that's what creates the robustness in the athlete. I think it's just interesting how
I love that. I love that changes. And I think it makes sense, and I think we do need to shift how we label things in our profession. Like I really do believe that. So I think it matters, right? In some cases it does matter, but I think sometimes we get very caught up in like these little tiny things like, oh, should I call this person a client or patient, when in reality we should really just be focusing on like, what can I do to best change the way that we can provide a positive experience for a client and get them back to what they want to do, versus like, how dare you call them a patient versus a client, you know?
Yeah, perfect. On that note, so I've just given you a little bit of another space to plug and a bit more time to talk about the mentorship. Is it relevant for sort of all physios? Because the kind of way you spoke about it, it's more of a values driven, it's not specific to Canada. So does that relate to everyone who's studying physio?
Yeah, totally. Like we've had people like in physio, we've had people in chiro, we've had some athletic therapists. So it's not just strictly like physio. Like a lot of those professions are kind of going through the similar thing as like us as physios do. We've worked with people like, obviously in Canada is like just a big demographic. We've had some people outside of the US. We do have a big like following from like UK as well as like Australia, but we haven't had any of those people in the mentorship specifically. But yeah, it's very transferable to anyone really anywhere, because like we're all kind of going through that similar, you know, process. And then in terms of like range of what would be the most valuable, I think from like anywhere between, you know, you're just getting out of school to 5 years out is like a very nice sweet spot we found, just because like it is, you know, it is more geared towards like new grads. But I think we want to target that range, because if you can start to implement these things sooner in your career, I think it's going to pay off long term. We have had people that have been like 5 years out. Some people I've talked to that are like 8 or 9 years out that are like, they really align with like what we're trying to talk about and they want to create that in their own career. They're just a little bit farther down the road. But in terms of like the sweet spot, I would say it's, you know, between new grad to like 5 years out is probably like a nice little spot.
I think a lot of this is actually taking the time to do it, and it can be quite difficult to sit down and say what are my values in physio and what does the ideal physio look like and what do I not want to be like. And I think if you haven't done that yet, it could be 10 years of being a clinician, but it could take it to really think about it and really dive in and go, well what do I want out of this? And don't ever think you can be too qualified to reassess that if you haven't already.
Yeah, the sooner you can figure that out, right? And it's gonna evolve in some sense as you go through your career. But I think a lot of us will know early on, like some of the standards and the values that we have as clinicians, and like those at the core will stay very similar as we go through. And then when new information gets put out into the space and research and all that, we can just layer that into, you know, what we already have as standards. And I'm sure it might shift a little bit as you go, but at least you're more aware of what that looks like, you know?
Perfect. Then just to finish, is how do people get in touch with you if they're interested in that? Sort of.
Yeah, I mean, the best way, you know, you could just if you follow us on Instagram, like at PT Coffee Cast is where our podcast is, and a lot of our mentorship goes hand in hand with the podcast. You can DM us there. We have a website, themovementmentorship.com, which you can check out, which has like all of our podcast and mentorship stuff there. There you can like schedule a call with me to just chat about like, is this something you want to do? Does this make sense for you as a clinician? We're looking for the right people. It's not about having like a ton of people in the cohorts and in the groups. It's like, we want to make sure it's a good fit for you and that you're a good fit for the group. So it's more just having a conversation around what that looks like. So there's an opportunity to schedule something like that, schedule a call with me there. And then, yeah, if you just DM us on Instagram, we're very active there.
Perfect. Perfect.
Just another quick note about Neonic. If you are in the Bradford or Shipley area and would like to get some help with an injury or long-term condition, and private physiotherapy is simply just not affordable for you, then Neonic may have the solution. Offering a free initial appointment and your subsequent 5 follow-up appointments only costing £20 total, Neonic offer an extremely affordable physiotherapy service. Don't worry, the price does not reflect the quality of care you will receive. The students are supervised by expert physiotherapy practitioners that have a wealth of experience from a range of different backgrounds. If you would like to find out more about the services Neonic offer, whether that's from a student or patient perspective, you can find out more at neonic.co.uk, and we'll leave the link in the show notes.
Right, Lewis, should we fire into the final 3 questions?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
The national anthem first. Start the national anthem.
We'll do that. We'll do that close night. He's gone for it. What would you say the 3 most important skills or qualities are for a physio?
Oh, really?
Now these are quick fire.
We gotta lower the volume on the Canada national anthem. I'm getting too excited, too patriotic. Sorry, 3 qualities of a physio. I would say like communication skills. I would say the ability to have like a curious and open mind, I think, is really important to like continually learning. So I'd say, yes, like curiosity, communication, and then... I would say I'm biased to having a good understanding of like progressive overload principles and like that kind of like that area of like stuff like in the strength and conditioning world, like just your basic progressive overload principles, I think is like super important and transferable to like most clinicians in the ortho space.
Perfect. What excites you the most about the future of physiotherapy?
This kind of stuff, man. I'm super pumped about like the students, like the new grads, the clinicians that are coming up, like the ability to have these types of conversations. Like I really truly believe like we're headed in a good direction with the profession. Like being able to understand the impact that we can have and, you know, the way that we can shape our careers as clinicians, I think is leaving the profession in a good place. I think physio has, the past has done really amazing things, and I love the profession. And I think there's a lot of things that we could add on top of what's already been done in the profession to make it even better. And I do think we're headed in the right direction. So I'm just really excited about we'll call it the new generation, the younger generation, the next wave of physio. Like I'm really excited to see that continue to evolve and grow and the amount of people that we can help.
And then final question is, are you satisfied?
Am I satisfied?
Yeah.
Honestly, I'm very satisfied. Yeah. I think like I try to like amongst the craziness of like running a business, trying to practice, doing the mentorship. Like, you know, it's a lot. And I mean, I put that on myself, but it's a lot of work and stress, and you know, it's not an easy thing, but I'm doing exactly what I want to be doing on a daily basis. And I'm 30 years old, and I know people chase that feeling of like finding that enjoyment in their career, but that challenge in their career and feeling like it's purposeful. And I feel very like lucky to have, you know, had some good things happen to me to put me in that position, but also to work really hard to provide that for myself. And I feel like I'm there. So I'm excited about that. And I'm satisfied with that feeling. And I'm looking forward to like continuing to just progress myself as we go forward in this life.
Perfect. Awesome answer. Well, Dalton, thank you very much for coming on. I think that's been really, really, really fun. Really eye-opening.
Like be here all night. That's yeah, a good honestly,
I do think we could be chatting for a lot longer, but we won't.
And I can go on and on. So it's probably good that that we wrap up here. So I don't. Who knows what I'll say if we keep going?
Perfect, Lewis. Over to you to wrap up.
Brad, any idea what episode number this is?
I have no idea, mate. But it's been Talking Physio Podcast. Thank you very much for listening. You can get us on the usual socials and. Any feedback, or if you want to check out Dalton, we'll put all this stuff in the show notes. And yeah, thank you for listening, and bye for now.
See you guys.